Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Good afternoon. This is Greg Wetzel on WKOK. I'm helping out with the Steve Jones Show today, and probably it will be for the next several Wednesdays, hopefully until they find a permanent replacement that I won't have to do it on all the time. Steve's going to have to pull me along quite a bit today. We're waiting for him to get into the studio. He has some other obligations today, and he'll get here as soon as he possibly can. While we're waiting for Steve to get here, why don't we look at some of the local high school teams and how they did in district action last night and over the season. You know, it's November 1st. It's hard to believe we're in the 11th week of high school football. We're now into the final rounds of soccer in the area. Field hockey's playing their district final games. And last night there was a game that took place in... I believe it was Bloomsburg. I'm not sure. Lewisburg and Central Columbia played to a 1-1 tie in the boys' semifinal game. But that's not the real story. The story was there were 32 penalty kicks in the game, and Central Columbia made 16 of their 16 kicks, and Lewisburg only made 15 of their 16. So they lost the game in penalty kicks in a game that finished almost at midnight last night. What a game that must have been, and pressure. What kind of pressure is put on a goalie in a game situation like that? Central Columbia will now move to the finals. I think this is the first time since about 2017 that Lewisburg hasn't qualified for the state tournament in soccer. So good job by Central Columbia last night. Midwest in boys soccer in Class 2A, they advanced to the championship game versus Central Columbia on Thursday night. You could say that Midwest probably is the Cinderella team of this tournament, as they were the number 8 seed, and they're now going to states as the first two teams go to states. They beat Wellsboro last night by a score of 4-0. In girls soccer in Class 2A, Lewisburg and Montoursville tied during the regulation part of the game and into two overtimes. They went to penalty kicks. Lewisburg lost by a score of 4-3 on penalty kicks. So Montoursville will go to the state tournament, and they will face Central Columbia in the district finals, who defeated Warrior Run last night by a score of 7-0. Central Columbia is the number 1 seed, and Montoursville is the number 2 seed. They both will advance to the state tournament. They will play Thursday evening for the District 4 championship. In boys 1A soccer, East Juniata defeated Northumberland Christian by a score of 2-1, and this game was also decided in the first overtime. In girls soccer 1A, Meadowbrook Christian beat Wyalusing by a score of 5-2 and qualified for the state tournament. Meadowbrook will play South Williamsport for the district title on Thursday evening. South Williamsport defeated Benton by a score of 1-0. Last night in girls field hockey, Lewisburg played at Sealands Grove against Northwest, defeated Northwest by a score of 9-0 to secure a spot in the state tournament. They will face Central Columbia, who defeated Midwest by a score of 1-0. Those two teams will meet at 7 o'clock on Thursday evening at Sealands Grove. Now, Midwest still has a chance to qualify for the state tournament as they take three teams from District 4 in Class 2A for field hockey. Midwest plays Northwest at Sealands Grove at 5 o'clock in the third place game. Now, tonight's action will find two championship games at Midwest High School involving Sealands Grove. At 6 o'clock, the Sealands Grove girls will take on the Shikellamy girls for the Class 3A championship in soccer and the right to go to the state tournament. At 8 o'clock, the Sealands Grove boys will take on the Mifflinburg boys in the District 4 Class 3A championships. Also, on Thursday at 5:30 at Lake Lehman High School. Seals Grove will play Crestwood in the combined District 2-4 Class 3A championship and the right to advance to the state tournament. Now, this week we have District 4 football games. They begin. Busy weekend of football. Three games on Friday night. Number 5, Tawanda in Class 2A will play number 4, Lime Mountain. That's a Friday night game, along with top-seeded Danville will host Athens in District 4 Class 3A football game. And Mifflinburg will host number 6, Warrior Run. Now, Mifflinburg defeated Warrior Run 2 weeks ago by a score of 28-21, so that's a rematch. And on Thursday afternoon in Class 3A, Lewisburg will host Montoursville in a rematch of an earlier game this year, in which Montoursville defeated Lewisburg in double overtime by a score of 21-14. In the Class 4A semifinals on Saturday, number 4 Shikellamy will travel to top-seeded Seals Grove in a rematch of a game where Seals Grove mercy ruled Shikellamy. And number 2 seed Jersey Shore will host number 3 seed Milton in a game where Milton is 9-1 and Jersey Shore is 9-0-1. It's a little step up in competition, though, for Milton over the regular season games.
It's great. It's great to be part of the Greg Wetzel show.
Hey, I'm glad you're here, Steve. Take over.
I mean, oh, gee, I hear snickering in the background. That can only mean one person. I heard the snickering in the background.
He's right? Here.
Yes, I'm here for support.
Support. Yeah, I'll tell you right now. When it comes to support, you need a village.
I know I need support, that's for sure.
I'm just here for moral support.
There you go. Yeah.
Moral support. All right. We'll talk about this more tomorrow when we do the roundtable. But, I mean, it is playoff time.
Yeah.
So I'll ask each of you philosophy here. All right. It's a polysyllabic word.
I had to look it up in my Webster's.
Yeah. All right. And this is something I brought up with Kevin last week on the show, but I just brought it up. It wasn't like, you know, this was not going to be a debate. I just brought it up, my own personal opinion. I know you have to fill spots, but I don't think under 500 teams should be in the postseason. Now, you guys live it. You tell me what the right answer is.
Well, was it the double A that didn't actually have a full squad? I think it's double A that actually has a couple of byes in the first round.
I think it is, yes.
Everybody else, well, here's the deal. By week 7, you have to make a decision. Yes, we're going to go District 4, or we're going to go. Is Eastern Conference still around? Yeah,
yeah.
I think it's still around.
Yeah, Shamokin, I think, is qualified for Eastern Conference.
And you need to make the decision. Now, what was it, 30 years ago, that was a no-brainer because you went Eastern Conference because that's where the glory was.
You didn't have districts 30
exactly,
years ago.
Exactly.
That's right.
And then when districts came out, you had to make a choice which way you went. Mm-hmm. You could still go to the state playoffs by winning Eastern Conference, but there was like this weird point system that was even crazier than the point system we have now. Mm-hmm. So when all that changed, the PIAA went, yeah, we're not getting the best games now. So if you want to get to states, you're going to have to go through districts.
Yep.
So teams had the option then to choose, and most of them chose, obviously, districts. And in the case of 4A, where Shikellamy and Seals Grove are, Columbia Montour Votek opted out. Shamokin opted out. That left basically Shikellamy as the only team. And they could have opted out themselves, but Coach Kizer looked at it as, I got a ton of freshmen on this team. I'm playing freshmen and sophomores. If I can get an extra week of practice, if I can get them another game experience against a good football team in a playoff atmosphere, we're going to be so much further ahead next year and the year after that and the year after that. That being said, I agree with you, Steve, 100%. I am not a big fan of filling the district brackets just to fill the brackets.
Yeah, I agree. I'm I I think they should be 500 or better to qualify for districts. However, that's something that PIAA is going to have to make a decision on. You know, right now they have it so it sets up that it ends, what, the second week in December?
Right.
Every year. So.
And Greg, you may know this. You know, being in school administration for a while, some of these schools do have their own internal record. Internal must be 500 to go to the playoffs.
Right, exactly. Some do that. I think Central Columbia dropped out fairly early this year.
They did.
Of the district playoff consideration also. So it is. It's a tough decision to make because one of the things, too, Steve, is this is the last football game that a lot of high school seniors are going to play. Even if they get beat, it's the last game they're going to play. So I see both sides of the story. You know, you never want your season to end, but it's tough. We're having replays of games that we know ended, what, teams lost by 40 points the first time they played.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And that's what's bad about the district setup the way it is currently.
See, for example, in college football, if you're 500 or better, you get to go to a bowl game, and you
right.
can then use the practice to then go from there.
Right.
This is a playoff game.
Yeah.
All right, and there's a big difference between a bowl game and a playoff game. And in other words, say, for example, a team is, I don't know, let's pick a number. How many games they play? 10?
10, yeah.
So say a team is 3-7. They decide they want to go to the playoff. Well, suddenly out of nowhere, this miracle happens. They win the district, they get in the states, and they make a run to Hershey. Everybody's all excited and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sitting there, the other teams are going, hey, yo, wait a minute. 3-7.
Yeah.
But the other side of that, Steve, is if you're a team coming in that won your district and maybe lost two games all season, I think you have to sit and question yourself, did we play the right schedule?
Right.
You know, at that point?
You know,
or did we just hit a buzzsaw?
I think several years ago there was a team from Western Pennsylvania that had a losing record that did go to state finals. I think they played Southern Columbia, if I'm not mistaken, in the state finals. And
I don't remember how far they went.
Yeah, I know they went pretty far, but they had a losing record. But the caliber of competition, and that's the thing that's happened in District 4 with the Heartland Conference. These schedules are set up on a rotating basis every 2 years, and then you get three or four games that you pick, so to speak.
Yeah, but there's this weird rule, and I don't know if it's still in there, but when they first formed the conference, the idea was we didn't want to have you travel a whole lot of travel. So we're going to make you, and I shouldn't say make, because that's not a fair word, but we're going to encourage you to play a Heartland Conference team out of division first, and then pick up somebody outside the Heartland Conference. And I think it's really hurt the district and the conference, quite honestly.
I do, too, because Milton and Lewisburg are 4 miles apart. They don't play each other.
Yeah,
which doesn't make sense.
It killed some rivalries. It absolutely really did.
It really did. But getting back to your original point, there's no easy. I don't think there's an easy answer to it, Steve. PIAA has to get involved and make a decision, is what it amounts to.
How do you know you played a tough schedule? I mean, really, in
you
reality.
Don't.
That's it.
And that's what we're going to find out about Milton this weekend, because on paper, they're 9-1. That's a great record. But you look at what their schedule is, and they didn't beat too many. They beat Mount Carmel with a winning record, and Mifflinburg was 500. I don't think they beat another team with a winning record.
Yeah.
And
it's kind of like, Steve, what you always talking about when colleges are trying to build their schedule and build their strength of schedule. They're doing, in high school, you're not doing it 3, 4, 5 years down the road.
Right.
You're still doing it maybe a year or two down the road and still struggling to figure out, you know, the teams you're going to get or the quality of opponent you're going to get.
And I don't blame Milton for what they did, because you look 4 years ago, they weren't winning a football game.
Right.
So they made their schedule a little easier, and guess what? They're starting to get people out for football. They're starting to get a crowd to games now. They have a beautiful stadium, a complex right now, that the new complex was built. So, I mean, it's worked for them. It really has, and hopefully they'll start a better competition down the road now because they're building their program back up.
There you go.
Yeah.
I don't think things, this is straight opinion, I don't think things will really change as far as how the district handles it until they start getting games where maybe they just don't have the gate that they expected to have. I think that would be the change in things.
Are they getting the gate? You guys have done games, with all due respect, with teams that had losing records in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Are they getting a good gate for those games?
They're still getting the same gate they would for a regular season game.
Exactly.
It's not packed house, but they're not losing anything.
Right.
I'll put it that way.
Where you'll see the gate increase is the final games.
Oh, absolutely.
There's everybody's pretty much been eliminated except eight teams in our district, and you see kids from Lewisburg going to see a final game somewhere else, or Milton going for another, you know, to watch another team play, stuff like that. So that's where the increase comes. But in the first round, it's like a regular season turnout.
But I'll say this, all that being said, it's still, and Greg, you know this as well as I do, it's still high school football.
That's right.
And anything, absolutely anything, can surprise you on any given Friday or Saturday.
I disagree with that. I totally disagree with that. I know you guys, every time I look at the scores, the percentage of blowouts versus the percentage of good games is about a 70-30 split.
In the first round.
Yeah.
No, yeah. I'm talking about
you mean
all
the regular
season.
Yeah.
All season.
There
have been a lot of games that have been very one-sided this year. You're absolutely right. I think maybe this year and maybe last year more than I've seen in a long, long time, I've seen a lot of lopsided games.
Lewisburg played 10 regular season games, was involved in 6 Mercy Rule games.
See?
Yep, 10.
Right.
Yeah, so 6 of the 10 were Mercy Rule games. 3 that Lewisburg Mercy Ruled their opponent, and 3 times that Lewisburg was Mercy Ruled.
But I know this is one example, and I think I might have made it. I think on the air during the game last week in the post game. Probably 3 years ago, Shikellamy had been Mercy Ruled in the first half by Jersey Shore and then went up for the first round of the playoffs against Jersey Shore. And that was a 7-point ball game going into the fourth quarter, and I think Shikellamy lost it by 15. Mm-hmm. And a game that they weren't even expected to be in. Is that common? No. But you know, that's if you're going to end up playing these games, that has to be the mentality you have going into it.
Oh, no. I did a Penn State basketball game with number one ranked Indiana at Indiana. They lost by 48 points. 1 month later, Penn State took them to double overtime.
Right.
But those are regular season games.
Yeah. Right.
All right. This is a playoff game where it's like, okay, to me, there are certain things in life that need to be earned. Mm-hmm. If you're 3-7, with all due respect, you did not earn it.
No.
I don't think either one of us on this side.
I agree with that.
I'm not a big fan of the sub-500 team. And you know what? We've talked about this, Steve, years ago when it came to the bowl games. I didn't really like sub-500 teams qualifying for bowl games either.
No. That's just the business of filling it out, and you're absolutely right.
Yep.
All right, we're going to do this by APR. Rice is over there going, hey, we're 100%. Real surprise. Here you go. Why don't you go to the Capital One Cheez-It Bowl in Shreveport here. Have a good time.
But I think this is the same situation right now in districts, is we're filling the brackets.
That's right.
I think that's what it is. And right, wrong, or indifferent, that's what the goal is.
But do you need to fill the bracket?
I don't think so.
Okay, to me, it's a buy.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think it comes down to...
Just so everybody understands, I'm not downing the hard work of the players, the hard work of the coaches.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all the effort they put in, because, I mean, even in losses, they're fighting their guts out. I'm not doing that. But now it's the playoff. The playoff, to me, brings with it a standard.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that you can say almost the same thing could hold true in wrestling. You know, where they have a sectional tournament and the top 2 or 3 kids qualify for districts. Well, then the top 5 kids qualify for regionals, you know, in a specific weight class. Well, then you go to regionals and the top 3 or 4 kids qualify for states. Well, the kid could finish 5th, 3rd, you know, 3rd, 5th, and 4th and qualify for states, you know. I'm not sure that's fair either, but that's why they've been doing it. You know,
I think it's just a good question to talk about because I think it's a fair topic to talk about. I understand it's exciting for the kids. They get another opportunity, another week of practice. I get all that, except you're getting another week of practice for a playoff game, not for just another opponent.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I get it. I guess we have to. I don't know where we're going to go with it. You know?
No, but I think it's just something on a show like this that's fair to talk about and debate.
Yeah.
It has no influence whatsoever over what the decisions were made.
Right.
If they say you're allowed to play the game, you're allowed to play the game, so go play.
That's exactly right.
But filling out the bracket means you have another gate, you have more people buying programs, and the real benefit is here the booster clubs are going to make out like bandits.
Exactly.
But Kevin, how big's the gate? Let's be honest. How big's the gate in terms of the number? How big's the number of programs? It really isn't.
I would say Lewisburg will have roughly 1,800 to 2,000 people attend the game, and Montoursville will bring 350 people to the game. So you're looking a little over 2,000 people.
And I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just showing what I think the district's looking at.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's their point of view.
Yeah.
Well, what does the district do with the money?
We have no
That's a whole other segment.
Right? But that's a legitimate question.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, the best in new inventory with great warranties. Fabulous pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee. And a terrific service department that backs it up from the routine to the difficult. They handle it all. All at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. He is one of the best in the business that I have great respect for and have for a long time, and that is Mark Brennan, 247 Sports. Mark, welcome back. It is so great to have you on again.
It's great to be here, Steve, and the check is in the mail for that nice comment. I appreciate it.
You earned over the years, you know that. Mark, before I get to Penn State, the predominant story, of course, in college football has been about Michigan. And this is really, every day it seems like something new comes out. What is your read on what is happening there or what could happen with there?
You know, I look at it from a different perspective. For people who don't realize, you know, my really sole focus is covering Penn State football. That's kind of what we do. And from my perspective, you know, I just think this is terrible for the Big Ten. I don't see this ending well for the Big Ten at all, because you have three power teams in the Big Ten, and I think you need all of them to be at the very absolute top of their game. And if this takes away from Michigan in any regard, I just think it's bad for the conference. I mean, if you're Penn State, you weren't able to beat Ohio State, you want Michigan at its very best. And, you know, I don't know what sanctions could possibly come down or what could possibly happen, but I think when you have a Big Ten that is so top-heavy, you know, you look at the college football playoff rankings that come out, and for something like this to happen to one of the big three, I just don't think is a good thing for the conference. And I know people may be saying, well, what do you care about the conference? This looks like there could be cheating involved, and that's all fine and dandy. But if you're in Penn State shoes or if you're in Ohio State shoes, you want Michigan to be as good as they can be. So if you have an opportunity to beat them, that's going to boost you that much higher. So I know that's a little different than a lot of people may look at that. But I just think for the Big Ten, this is just an absolute terrible look. And I don't know that anything could happen by the time the Big Ten title game gets here or by the time the college football playoff things are announced. But I just think all this distraction at Michigan isn't a good thing for the conference in general.
All right. Now, that aside, let's get to Penn State. 7-1, won the game Saturday, 33-24. Everyone concedes, obviously, not Penn State's best game. What did you see pro and con in that game?
I think pro, obviously, is the way certain people bounce back in that game. You know, I've been a little bit tough on Keandre Lambert-Smith all year. Early in the season, you know, he had some 15-yard penalties that were really uncalled for. Really early in the preseason, we saw him getting after it with somebody in practice. These are things that you expect from a leader, and he absolutely has to be a leader. So you know what I liked in that game, Steve, is he had a play where he was open down the middle of the field and dropped the ball.
Right.
And guess what? He bounced back and ends up having one of his best games and ends up making a clutch play when it matters. To me, that's the development of a player as a leader. That's a guy saying, you know what? This team is struggling. This offense is struggling. I just messed up. I'm flushing it. I'm putting that in the rearview mirror, and I'm going to step up, and I'm going to make a play. And I think when we look back on Keandre Lambert-Smith's career, obviously there were some big things that happened late last season, and his performance in the Rose Bowl, you know, that was just undeniable how unbelievable that was. But I think what he did in that game, and that really stood out to me. And then obviously, I think it goes without saying. Listen, I've heard people say, maybe it was a good thing Drew Aller threw an interception. No, it was not a good thing that Drew Aller threw an interception. That's
right.
Ridiculous. I mean, who says that? But what was a good thing is the way he bounced back after throwing the interception. So you never want to see a player throw an interception. I mean, that makes no sense whatsoever. But the fact that he came back and played with confidence, we know how emotional that Ohio State game was for him, and understandably so. But for him to again, bounce back and play relatively well overall against Indiana, and then to make the play in the clutch, I thought was big. And then obviously, you know, with that defense, I give them a pass because they have played at an elite level all year. And everybody's going to have a little bit of a downturn. But guess what? Again, when the game was on the line, they forced a three and out. And I was down there on the field, Steve, with my daughter, Grace, who shoots for us. And after Keandre Lambert-Smith scored, I said, watch, the Penn State defense is going to force a turnover here because this is what Indiana does in these big games. And sure enough, it wasn't a turnover, but it, you know, denied Dennis Sutton. Caused a fumble that went out of the end zone. And I think the fact that people stepped up when it mattered, that was my overall takeaway. The negative, Steve, and I know I'm going on here, is the rushing game. You know, I think we're eight games in, and we can no longer say that, it's some sort of aberration or something. I mean, this ground game, it kind of is what it is. And listen, I know that there for a long time this season, Penn State was leading the Big Ten in rushing offense, but you have to remember a lot of that came against Delaware and UMass. And now you look, they're in the Big Ten, and to be unable to generate the kind of rushing game that I thought we all figured Penn State was going to be able to have, that to me is an alarm. That is something that I'm surprised they haven't been able to pull off. And, you know, the one stat that really jumps out at me is, you know, I think Catron Allen's fine because he is what he is, a power back who's going to blow through people and do what he does. But Nick Singleton, the inability of him to pop the big plays, and I don't think it's all on Nick. I think it's the offensive line. I think it's the tight ends and receivers blocking. But, you know, you look in conference play only, and he's down to 3.6 yards per carry. And we're in a healthy sample size of the season to date. So all of that, that's kind of what jumped out at me from a negative perspective.
What then are you seeing in that part of it between the backs, the offensive line, the tight ends? What are you seeing there as to what may not be clicking?
I don't think the offensive line is playing with the nasty streak that a lot of us thought, especially when it comes to the running game. And I also think especially, you know, I'm not good enough, and I'll just say this straight out, because I don't have the game tape and I'm not able to look at things to know exactly how well the tight ends and receivers are blocking. But it just doesn't seem like it is, you know, just based on production, it doesn't seem what it's been at the last couple of years. And then, you know, we know how good Brenton Strange was in that regard.
Sure.
But also with Nick, it's just like, listen, he didn't he didn't become unexplosive overnight. And I just does it, I go back to the kick return in that game last week, and he kind of tripped over the kicker, and it's like there's just something that's just not there. He's been this close on how many of those, but we've been saying that since the beginning of the year, right? So whether it's a kick return or whether it's a run where he just doesn't get around one guy, so I think it's a group effort. I mean, I know that's kind of a cop out, but I think it would be unfair to lump it all on one area. I think if your running game isn't doing what it needs to do, I think you have to look at everybody. And I think, more importantly, I think everybody has to take a look at themselves. And knowing Jawan Sider and the way he coaches, I have a hell of a lot of respect for him. He has the bona fides. He's put the backs in the NFL. He knows what he's doing. So let's see if he can get this turned around in the last four games, because I think for Penn State to have an opportunity in the upcoming game, I know that Penn State has to take them one at a time, but I don't. And I know that there's a game on the horizon where they're going to need the rushing game to be better than it's been. And it's not this week. It's going to be in a couple weeks. And let's see if they can get it turned around.
What have you seen now through eight starts in the development of Drew Aller?
I think going back to what we said before, coming out of that, well, first let me say one thing. The way that he's conducted himself with the media, and I know people may say, oh, who cares the way he conducts himself with the media? No, when you're a quarterback, that's an important thing. And he has come out after every game and not taking credit himself, talked about his teammates, said all the right things. That's important. And then he came out after that Ohio State game, Steve, and I'm guessing he didn't want to come out. Right. And he was emotional. He was emotional on the sideline, and he knew he was going to break down. And you know what? That kid sat up there and took our questions. And even when he was crying, I cannot tell you how much respect I have for him. That is what a leader does. Okay? You and I have covered Penn State football long enough, and we know that the vast majority of these guys, it's not when they win when they have to come out and show what they're all about after the game. It's after a loss. And the best leaders, the Jahan Dotsons, the Michael Robinsons, I'm just pulling names out. Don't think I'm leaving anybody out. But these are guys who really stood out to me, that when it was absolutely the Sean Lees, I mean, when it was the most difficult time when they lost games, they came out and they faced the media. And I think that was big for Aller. With respect to where he is in his development as a quarterback, I don't think you can look past the fact that he has however many touchdowns it is now and one interception.
Right.
I mean, he has done what they have asked him to do, and that's not make the giant mistake outside of one. And if you were to tell me that through eight games he was going to have one interception, so now I wonder if, again, he's gotten to this point, now do they let him go a little bit? You know, now do they allow him to take a few more chances here and there? I'm not going to question what they've done in his development to this point, because it's gotten him to 7-1, and I don't know what he could have done different to win that Ohio State game. You know, I think that was, again, a collective effort. So I think he's where he needs to be, and I'm looking forward to seeing in this last third of the season what Mike Yurcich and James Franklin allow him to do.
Obviously, there was one big mistake in the Indiana game defensively, and that, of course, was the miscommunication. Overall, what are you seeing with this defense that gives them a shot in every game?
Well, I think it's the depth, right? I mean, even though they haven't gone super deep the last couple of weeks, I mean, we've started to see, you know, who Manny Diaz's go-to guys are. But I just think his creativity, Steve, you know, knowing how good their DBs are, and knowing what he can do in that prowler package, and knowing how good his defensive ends are when Chop is there, and how to utilize all three of them, and going deeper on the at defensive tackle. I think they're much better defensive tackle this year than they were last year. I just think all of those things. I would think the thing that I'm kind of waiting for is for Abdul Carter to maybe have that breakout game. He's played well, and I think we have to be real careful when we start looking at stats with this defense, because we know how little some of the starters played right through the first half of the season. So, but having said that, I think we know what Abdul Carter's about in the ability to make splash plays and to go kind of sideline to sideline. And I almost think there have been times this year where it looks like he's been in cruise control, and I think he can amp it up another level. And I'm not trying to be critical of him because he's a young guy. He's only in his second year in the program, and you know, I think he would be the first to admit that he has a lot to learn, but he's got a really high ceiling. He has a really, really high ceiling. He's big, he's fast, he's aggressive, he's mean, he's tough. But I think he can flash just a little bit more. So that's one of the things that I'm looking at. But with Manny Diaz, I mean, his creativity and the way that he's able to use his depth, I've really been impressed by.
What have you seen in the special teams as the season's progressed?
Well, I think you hit the midway point of the season, or more specifically the bye week, and you were really wondering about the special teams. And now all of a sudden, I mean, Stacy Collins, I don't know what they did during that bye week, but, you know, the last couple of weeks they have really turned it around and just been, you know, terrific. I mean, obviously Daquan Hardy, and I completely get what James Franklin's saying. It's like, you know, why did it take all this long to get him out there? Well, they've had some guys who have done a fairly good job, mm-hmm. but, you know, his ability has been unbelievable. I think Riley Thompson, I mean, he's just been terrific. I mean, he stepped up. His best game, in my view, was when they needed him the most, was in that Ohio State game. You get into a field position game, and that guy does it on the big stage. That was really impressive. And then Falcons. I mean, you know, early in the season, you didn't know what you were going to get out of their place kicker unit, and they kind of struggled. And, you know, you know, would you prefer he makes 250-yarders? Great. But I think when you're kicking from that distance, he goes, he makes big field goals out at Ohio State, and then he goes 1-2 from 50-plus against Indiana. So you have to like that. So I think that was an area that was trending negatively until they got to the bye week, and give Stacy Collins a lot of credit. You know, they kept grinding and kept getting after. And I think the other thing, Steve, I would say is their coverage teams, although that isn't really a surprise because I think we know how athletic this team is. Yeah. And – you know, the job that Gabe Wosu is able to do on kickoffs, you know, just blasting them down there. The coverage teams hasn't been a surprise at all, but I think the way that the place kicker and punter have really stepped up the last couple weeks, and that's going to be important as the season winds down. That was an area where I thought that was a negative for them, again, going into the bye, and I think it's turned into a positive pretty quickly.
Your viewpoint on the game with Maryland this weekend?
Yeah, you know, I just... It's the one team outside of Ohio State that I think has the sort of athleticism at the skill positions that could give Penn State trouble. Mm-hmm. But I also know that Tonga Vailoa is the quarterback. You would know the numbers better than I do, but I think Penn State sacked him 10 times in the last two games. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're able to get to him, they're going to have trouble scoring enough points. And I look at a Maryland team that just gave up, 30-plus to Northwestern. I mean, 33 to Northwestern. Mm-hmm. So whatever we've been seeing out of the Penn State offense, hey, typically when they're not playing Ohio State, they've been able to put up 30 points. And I see Penn State scoring, you know, right in that 30 area, and I'm not sure that I see Maryland being able to put up that many points. It's really weird what happens to this team at the end of October and into early November. But that's an instance where, yeah, they go out to Ohio State, are looking really good, and then get – ultimately blown out in the third and fourth quarter, and then you lose at home to Illinois and you lose on the rope to Northwestern. We've seen both of those teams. We saw what Penn State was able to do against both of those teams, and I just wonder that even with the athletic ability there, we've seen this team come apart in November, and it looks like it's happening again. So I think Penn State's going to be in pretty good shape this week.
Mark, very quickly, basketball. I know it starts on Monday. Any quick thoughts on that before Penn State gets rolling?
Yeah, I mean, people, just be ready for Ace Baldwin. I mean, I was thawed out at that game, but just seeing him in the little we've seen him in practice and that game at Rock, I mean, this guy, he is, like, unflappable. I mean, he is just, he's not going to beat you with three-point shots, but, you know, I was watching the one drill in practice, Steven. I'm sure you've been there more than I have, but they have the guards going up, driving on the big men, and he is just, like, completely unfazed. I mean, he goes into traffic and can use his body, and he's so cool and calm and collected. And the other thing I would say is that I'm anxious to see how this all comes together, but really impressed by their overall length, and that's just not the big guys. I mean, that's Kern. They just have Dunn. I mean, they have guys who have, like, longer arms and kind of spidery, and I mean that in a positive way. So I'm anxious to see what they do. And I think they're going to be more athletic, obviously, than we've seen. But the key is going to be with all those disparate parts that they're bringing from different areas, how do you bring them together? And, again, that's where I think Ace is going to be a key, because he's kind of, you know, he played under Mike Rhodes, obviously, for people who don't know, at VCU, Big Ten or A-10 Player of the Year. He's able to be kind of that conduit from the coaching staff and Nick Kern as well. And so I think that's going to be really help. But I'm just telling people that when you get a chance, Ace Baldwin is fun to watch on both ends of the floor. Just a cool customer, and he's going to be a really nice player for him this year.
Yeah, both ends. You're absolutely right. Got that nice lefty jumper, too. So, hey.
Yeah.
Mark, thanks so much. Always appreciate the time you give us.
I appreciate it, too, Steve. Always have fun talking football and hoops with you. Thank you.
Mark Brennan, 247 Sports. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummelsworth, and online at sunburymotors.com. All right, Greg will be rejoining us in the next half hour. I barely talked in the opening half hour, not because of Greg. Trying to think who the third person was. I feel like doing the Bill Walton with Dave Pashman. It's Kevin, right? It's Kevin, right? Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Okay.